Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. You can stream live while we're on the air, or if you're ever interested in topics that we may have covered in the past, or you're a new listener and you have no idea what topics we have covered in the past, the podcasts are available on either of those websites, yourfinancialchoices.com or wdiy.org. And when you go on WDIY site, you just look for local programming and scroll through looking for the show, and you will see the list of topics that we've covered, and you can click on those and listen to your heart's desire. So that's that info. Today is February 8th, 2017. The markets were pretty flat today. The Dow closing at 20,054, the NASDAQ at 5682, and the S&P at 2294. We are talking about Schedule A itemized deductions, or using the standard deduction tonight. As many of you know, we're in tax season. It's starting up. I like people to start getting ready, get your records organized, and make sure that you file a complete and accurate return, which we discussed last week. So we're kind of moving through some of the schedules that may be applicable to you. And quite often what I hear about are people asking, you know, should I itemize? Do I itemize? So we're going to talk about that. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C's in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information. And we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them, especially since I don't have my tax reference book tonight, so I might have to, it'll be a little bit harder. But the number, folks, if you'd like to call in, 610-758-8810, that's 610-758-8810, and email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So talking about itemizing or the standard deduction, itemizing deductions is great if it saves you taxes, but it is a bit of work on your part. And that work can include tracking things like medical expenses, charitable contributions, miscellaneous deductions. So I want to talk about the differences and some of the misconceptions about itemizing and when it's time to review whether you should or not. But hopefully we'll talk enough about it so that some folks will have a better sense of whether or not they should spend that time figuring out all those numbers and whether or not they should collect that information, because it can be a lot of work. So let me go through this. So let's consider that you may not have to file a tax return at all, depending on your income. So you, before you start worrying about deductions, let's refresh ourselves on whether or not you even have to file. I think that's a good place to start. This would be important to people who are acting as powers of attorney or helping elderly relatives as well, because you may end up spending a lot of effort trying to gather information when, in fact, it may not be needed. So the IRS gives some guidelines as to whether or not people need to file. And that is all available on the IRS website. So I'm going to try to kind of give you some high-level numbers. And the IRS website, of course, is irs.gov. And there's always a search box in the upper right-hand corner. And you can just type in who must file. But if you're a U.S. resident, a U.S. citizen or a resident alien, whether you must file a federal income tax return depends on your gross income, your filing status, your age, and whether you are a dependent. So there are some tables that are available. So we have a filing requirements chart for most taxpayers. So for example, if you're single and at the end of 2016 you were under 65, then file a return if your gross income was at least $10,350. If you're over 65, the gross income is $11,900. Now, here's the tricky part. They have to define what gross income is. And gross income means all income you receive in the form of money, goods, property, and services that isn't exempt from tax, including any income from sources outside the United States, or from the sale of your main home. Don't include any Social Security benefits unless you're married filing separate and you lived with your spouse anytime during 2016. So I don't want to get into these complicated calculations, but just take the time and the moment to kind of gather what income might be coming in for you or that elderly relative or someone that you might be taking care of, or even your children. And if it's under certain thresholds, maybe you don't need to worry about it. Now, sometimes people will be under the filing requirement. Maybe you have someone, your gross income was $6,000 and you don't have any other income. You worked a part-time job and you know, you have other means that you're living off of, but that's really your only income. Well, you want to look to see if your employer withheld any federal taxes, or maybe you're retired and you're getting a pension and you get a 1099-R form. And on that form, it shows that you might have received $6,000 in pension. So in my little example, you're under the what would be the gross income filing requirements. But if you look and you see that you have federal withholdings, even though you're not required to file, you may want to file to get those withholdings back. Because technically, if you're not required to file, it means you don't have taxable income. But Lori, you just said, I got $6,000. Well, yeah, you got $6,000, but you can't forget that the IRS gives us exemptions and this standard deduction that come off that income first. I can't tell you how often I've had people say, oh, I made $6,000. I'm going to have to pay 15% tax on that. Well, no, or 10% tax, whatever bracket they think they might be in. You have to factor in these other deductions you get. So the exemption and the standard deduction. If you have zero taxable income, then any federal income tax that was withheld will be refunded to you in that example. So that is a time where you have to pay attention to whether you're required to file or not, may not have been, but might want to for the refund. And also, these rules don't necessarily apply to Pennsylvania or whatever state you might reside in. For example, in Pennsylvania, if you have earnings over $35, you technically have to file a tax return. It doesn't mean that you're going to owe tax in Pennsylvania. It just means that you're required to file a return if you earned over $35. Pennsylvania does have something called special tax forgiveness, depending on your income, and it might not be taxable income. There's something called eligibility income, and I'm not going to go into that tonight, but you may be eligible not to it's called for special tax forgiveness. So for folks who are low income, if you have not been filing that form, SP, for Pennsylvania, that may be something you want to refer to as well. So we are talking about whether or not, number one, you have to file a return. And if we find that you don't have to file a return because you're under those income levels, then guess what? Don't go look for those medical receipts, or don't go look for real estate tax bills. Unless, of course, you might have something like an IRA and you want to convert it. Hopefully, I'll have time to talk about that later in the show. But technically, you might not have to do all that work. Folks, we're at our first break. If you have questions, love them. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is throwing a party, and you're invited. Join us for a night of live music, food, drinks, and fun as we celebrate WDIY's 22nd anniversary, featuring a performance from Steve Broski and his Big Little Band, Saturday, March 4th at the Ice House in Bethlehem. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about standard deductions and itemizing and whether you should go to the trouble of collecting all the little pieces of paper for your charitable contributions or the drugstore prescription bags that have your receipt stapled to it. I've seen them. So we're talking about whether or not it makes sense for you to keep track of all those deductions, whether you're going to itemize. So the first thing we talked about is, do you even need to file a return? That's something to pay attention to. And again, this isn't just for you, our listeners, who may be regular taxpayers. It could be you could be helping your parents, an aunt, uncle, elderly friends. You want to be aware of this. You may be a power of attorney for someone. You need to know whether or not you're going to be required to file a return. And maybe you're not required to, but there might be times where you want to. And I mentioned where you might want to would be if there's a refund, if there had been federal withholdings. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Now, on that point about federal withholdings, if in fact you have found over successive years that you are either under the filing requirement, but you still have these withholdings coming out of maybe a pension or IRA distribution, if you know you're not going to have income tax obligations going forward, you can change the withholdings on things like pensions or IRAs. If you have a pension, just like when we work, we fill out something called a W-4 to tell the employer our filing status and how they should withhold for our federal income tax. We have that with pensions as well, and it's called a W-4P, P as in Paul or P as in pension. And you can get that form online or at the IRS website, or sometimes you may be able to walk into the HR office where you were employed, if they're still around, and ask for a W-4P to change your withholdings. And you should be able to check something that says, you know, withhold zero or withhold nothing. Because if you otherwise wouldn't have to file a return other than for that refund, you know, that's a way to save money. Make the withholding zero, then you don't have to worry about getting that refund. And you save the cost of filing a tax return. I did hint at something that if you are under those filing requirements and you never have taxable income, you don't need to worry about keeping track of deductions. And then I said, unless you might want to convert an IRA to a Roth, dot, dot, dot. What I am referring to there are times when you might have an elderly person who doesn't have a lot of other income. They're not working anymore. Maybe they don't even have a pension. They might have Social Security, and maybe they still have an IRA that they're taking some monies out of, that they're, you know, putting it on page one, but there's no taxable income, but they're only taking out a minimum amount. If there are those kinds of people, you sometimes want to play the tax brackets where you could, let's pretend the required minimum distribution is $3,000 and I have $100,000 in an IRA and I have no taxable income. And in fact, not only do I not have any taxable income, I have really negative taxable income after figuring in the standard deduction or the exemption. Well, what if I took some of that money out of my IRA and converted it to a Roth, I'm putting a little bit extra income on my return. What's that going to do to my taxable income? If it's still zero, then that's a great tool to convert what would otherwise might be taxable money going to our beneficiaries to a Roth IRA. And I'm giving them now a tax-free asset when I die. And that is especially a valuable tool to use when you have someone who might have nursing care costs, which are astronomical. When I had a woman who was paying $80,000 for a nursing home, and she had a big IRA, the suggestion was, let's convert this IRA to a Roth IRA. And subsequently, we paid no income tax on it because there was huge deductions to offset that conversion. And subsequently, when she passed away, her two boys now both received a Roth IRA, an inherited Roth IRA. So that was the planning around that. I got off a little tangent from my comparing standard deduction to itemized deductions, which I will get back to soon enough. I had a call come in from Jeff in Macungie off air, and Jeff asked, with proposed legislation getting rid of property tax, will it make a difference to people who itemize? Jeff, you know, I heard about that. I actually haven't been plugged in enough to know how viable that actually is, or if there's a chance that could really happen, that if they get rid of the property tax, your question is then for itemizing, the ability to itemize for many people may be reduced, diminished, or no point to itemizing anymore if they now no longer have these deductions they can use. Well, one of the other things that's being proposed at a federal level, one of the some of the tax proposals that are getting bantered about is to raise the standard deduction from where it is currently. So for married filing joint, let's say it's like, I don't know the number for 2016 off the top of my head, or 2017, but let's say $15,600 for a married filing joint couple over 65 or something. $15,600. They're thinking about raising it to like $30,000. So if they're already, if the federal government has this proposal where they already are going to raise the standard deduction so high, that in itself may be the reason why many people won't itemize or benefit from itemizing anymore. So that might sound like a good deal. Well, they're going to lower taxes. I wouldn't have gotten a deduction for that anyway. They're raising the standard deduction. That might work out for some people. What is not as well known is in that proposal, they're also proposing to get rid of the exemptions. So for some people with children, where it's not just husband and wife, maybe they have five kids, I could see where they might be hurt by that because they're going to raise the standard deduction, get rid of the exemptions. That might hurt people. It might not be as big of a deduction for folks then if they eliminate the exemptions. But for married filing joint, husband and wife, that could end up being a windfall for them. And if they, of course, get rid of the real estate taxes, regardless of any new tax proposals at the federal level, it certainly will make it less attractive for a lot of people who itemize. You're in Macungie in Pennsylvania. Our taxes aren't as bad as what the folks in New Jersey have. In New Jersey, I've had clients who have real estate tax bills of $12,000, $24,000. We're talking really serious real estate taxes in New Jersey. So that may or may not impact them. But in Pennsylvania, if you're in a district that you might have $4,000 or $5,000, that could make a difference whether you itemize or not. So if they do away with it, you're right. You may not be itemizing, but I don't see that happening for, you know, 2016. So we're good to go. 2017, you may be impacted. You know, I'm curious as to how it might affect charitable contributions as well, because if they do raise that standard deduction, are people more apt to give because they know they're getting a tax deduction for it? It kind of helps out a little bit. I've been told by many people, oh, no, people are charitably inclined regardless of the tax deduction. Well, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are charitably inclined regardless of the tax deduction, but I think for a lot of people it does make a difference if they get a tax deduction. So good question. Thank you for calling in, Jeff. I appreciate it. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show, folks. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. That's right. They are yours. They are financial choices, and we make them every single day. Part of those financial choices are understanding our tax situation and being engaged in that process. And if you have questions about that, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We can talk live with you on air or off air, whatever you are more comfortable with. I do love questions. So 610-758-8810. I was just saying in the last segment, oh, whatever that standard deduction was, I'm ballparking, I don't know, and I have it written down right in front of me. So let me go over what those standard deductions are. And again, this is all available on the IRS's website, irs.gov. Lots of information there. So for 2016, the standard deduction amounts vary depending on your filing status. So the filing status, if you're single, the standard deduction is $6,300. Unless you're over 65, they give you a little extra, and then it's $7,550. For married filing joint, it's $12,600. And if you're over 65, it's $15,100. Married filing separate, $6,300, and head of household, $9,300. So that's the standard deduction, but there's also an additional deduction, $1,250 if you're over 65, and another $1,250 if you're blind. So you get kind of a double there, and if you're both that way, then you really get a little extra. But on top of that, we also get those exemptions. Jeff, we have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a credit card that gives us money back as rewards. It's part of a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that must be a taxable income. Is that not reportable?
You know what, Carolyn? That's a great question. But no, I do not believe it is taxable. I've never seen a tax reporting document for that. I don't know if it's because it's deemed to be something possibly that you're paying for, but I've never seen a 1099 for that. But that's a great question.
Okay.
There's as far as I know, it's not reportable. That would be something I would probably have to check into, but I've never seen that. I've never seen it come up. And I think it is because there is some, there must be some precedent that it's something that in essence we're paying for by virtue of, you know, having that card and patronizing, you know, that business or something. So I have not seen that. Same thing with like miles. Think about that. You know, airline miles, when you get airline miles, that's never been a taxable transaction for folks. So that's my answer on that right now until I hear different. But now that you've asked the question, someone will think of it and they'll start taxing it.
Oh, I hope not.
You let the cat out of the bag, Carolyn.
Could I ask you another one?
Sure. Go ahead.
If you want to, everybody wants to pay the least amount of taxes possible, does it make any sense Now, this is for people who have a lot of their assets in IRAs, be it Roth, be it traditional.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make any sense to tap the principal of a Roth IRA where you're not going to get penalized to then put it into a regular IRA to reduce your income
okay.
for tax purposes?
Boy, you're really clever. That is something to think about. So there are a number of strategies or situations that I could see would need to be addressed there. So let's pretend someone in this in your story has a Roth IRA. And just for the audience, a Roth IRA, you put the money in, you don't get a deduction for it. And the IRS lets us take out our original contributions without penalty or tax if we only tap those original contributions. Unless, Caroline, it's a conversion. We can't do that. So let's pretend this is just a regular Roth IRA. We've been putting money in every year. So yes, the IRS says we can take out our original contributions. Now, you said, can we take it out of there to put it into a regular IRA if it's going to reduce our taxes? So that's the situation. All of a sudden, we're preparing the tax return. And luckily, the IRS gives us until April 15th of the year following to decide if we want to fund an IRA or not. So now we're doing our 2016 taxes. We're in, you know, let's say March of 2017. We're doing our 2016 taxes. And we see that, oh, gosh darn it, if we had only had, you know, $500 less income, we would have been entitled to retirement savers credits, or we would have been entitled to American Opportunity credits, or we would have been entitled to some other, you know, great feature. So now we want to find a way to reduce our income by that much. And if we were eligible to put money into a regular IRA, which means either we don't have any other employer retirement plan, or our income is below the thresholds that the IRS lets us do both, you know, an employer plan and a traditional IRA, that if that is going to be allowed and workable for us, might we want to do that? So I say, hey, Carolyn, why don't you do $500 into this regular IRA? You'll benefit by all these other credits. You say, Lori, I don't have any money. I say, hey, Carolyn, you have a Roth IRA. Do you have some original contributions in there? Then, Carolyn, yes, you're thinking way ahead of the game. And yes, you could do that. You could take that money out. Now, let's pretend you said, well, Lori, I put all my money in my Roth in 2016 because you said on the radio, Roth IRAs are awesome. And I put all my money in a Roth. Now you're telling me to put it into a regular IRA. I say, hey, Carolyn, you know what else the IRS lets us do? They let us recharacterize what we've done. So we could go to the Roth IRA custodian and say, hey, custodian, we want to take $500 out of that Roth and put it into the traditional IRA. So you can do it the other way, too. You can go back and recharacterize whether it's a Roth or an IRA, as long as you do it by April 15th. Because I might also tell you, if you told me you did it, and now you made way too much money, and now you're not allowed to do it, the IRS says that I can tell you, Carolyn, go to the custodian and tell them, oops, I put too much in. I wasn't supposed to. I want to take that out, whatever I put in for 2016. So there is some flexibility there. But yeah, that's an idea that you could do that. What I would prefer to say, though, is if you had other money and putting money into an IRA is going to reduce your taxes, if you didn't already do a Roth, because there's a max of how much you can do. If you're over 50, you could do $6,500 to either a Roth or an IRA or a combination of the two. So if you had, let's say, put in $2,000 into a Roth and you would benefit by putting into a regular IRA and you had money sitting in the bank, I might say, hey, well, let's think about that because I'd rather you not reduce your Roth. Are you following me on that?
I am.
Okay. So I love that you're thinking of all these things. But you are one of my favorite listeners, Carolyn. You know that.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really great. It's good to have that flexibility.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. Do you have anything else? Or you?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, great. Have a good night. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to break, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY, where we have very informed listeners. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 49 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, rain turning into snow, lows around 28. Thursday, a winter storm warning is in effect, expecting heavy snow and windy conditions with 6 to 8 inches of accumulation, highs only 28 degrees. Friday, sunny skies are expected with highs around 23. The time now is 6:30 p.m. Now, back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can also email questions to yourfinancialchoices.com. I think there's a link for contact me and, you know, shoot me a question. I'm happy to respond. So let me finish a couple things about that standard deduction I had mentioned. If you're eligible, I kind of went over the limits. I also want to mention for anybody who prepares their own tax return on paper, if you file a 1040 EZ regularly and now you're over 65 or blind and you want that additional standard deduction, income tax returns for single and joint filers with no dependents, you can't use the form 1040 EZ. You'd have to use the form 1040 A or the 1040. All right. So I just want to mention that sometimes you're not going to find that box there if you're used to filing the 1040 EZ and then you listen to the show and you find out, yay, I'm over 65. I get an extra standard deduction and you can't find it on the form. Well, it's because you got to file a different form. So you go to the 1040 A or the 1040. If you can be claimed as a dependent by another taxpayer, your standard deduction for 2016 is limited to the greater of $1,050 or your earned income plus $350. But the total can't be more than the basic standard deduction for your filing status. So you also want to make sure that you understand filing status, dependent status, and the earned income as well. All right. Now, certain taxpayers aren't entitled to the standard deduction, and I'm not going to highlight all of them, but I will mention a married individual filing separate whose spouse itemizes deductions must itemize. So that's when you're not going to be entitled to take a standard deduction. All right, I want to spend the rest of the show talking about when to itemize and what kind of deductions we're looking at when we itemize. And for people who now take the standard deduction, when is it time for you to think about whether you should revisit your ability to itemize or not? What happens sometimes, I think, when we prepare tax returns, whether we prepare them for other people or we prepare them for ourselves, we get into such a habit of just doing the same thing as last year that we don't realize what we don't know, what we might miss, because we're just doing the same as last year, same as last year. And your circumstances may have changed. So I want to hopefully highlight when that might occur and when and why you want to itemize. I already referred to that earlier in the show where you might have someone who has really high medical expenses who wouldn't otherwise have to even file a tax return but may want to if they could take advantage of tax breaks or tax brackets or the zero taxable income. If they have such high deductions, they might want to actually force income onto their tax returns by doing things like Roth conversions. All right. So When to itemize. You may benefit from itemizing your deductions on Schedule A if you, one, don't qualify for the standard deduction, because maybe, again, you're married filing separate and your spouse is itemizing, so you would benefit because you're not allowed to take the standard deduction, or the amount you can claim is limited. You might have large uninsured medical and dental expenses during the year. So this might be one of those areas. Remember I said you might always use the standard deduction. When might it be time to think about, gosh, could I get more benefit from itemizing? Well, from time to time, I will see people who might have like their whole mouth with implants and they pay $20,000. And I may be way off on that number. I'm just making it up. Or they might buy a hearing aid, and the hearing aid costs can really vary as well. Or you had some big, you no longer had employer provided insurance, and now you're paying out of pocket for some high insurance, you know, premiums, things like that. So all of a sudden, when you may not have been able to itemize in the past, you might be able to. Or maybe now you don't work any longer. Before you were working, and anyone who has ever itemized before knows that there's a limitation on the medical expenses you can take. And for some of us, it's 10% of our page one income that isn't allowed. So if I made $100,000, 10% is $10,000. If my medical expenses were $10,000, the limitation's $10,000, I received no benefit from deducting medical expenses. But if now I'm not working and I don't have $100,000, maybe I only have a $20,000 pension, and 10% of $20,000 is only two. So if I have medical expenses of $10,000 with a limitation of two, I now have about $8,000 of medical expenses I can take on Schedule A in that circumstance. And when I add it to all the other items on Schedule A, itemizing may be higher than the standard deduction. So you can't always rely on same as last year because our circumstances change. You may be able to itemize if you have a mortgage. Quite often when we have mortgages, if we buy a house, $200,000, you know, 4% interest, 200,000 times 4%, we might have $8,000 of mortgage interest, and we have real estate taxes, and all of a sudden we add up all these different items, it may put us over the standard deduction threshold because now we have mortgage interest and we have real estate taxes. Again, that situation may change when we're not working, our income's lower, and we might benefit from those deductions, or we might not need them. You might have large unreimbursed employee business expenses or other miscellaneous deductions. This is the one that I find it's kind of harder to take. There's a limitation of 2% of your adjusted gross income. If you're working, if you heard what I said unreimbursed employee business expenses. If you're working, first of all, your unreimbursed employee business expenses these days might not be anything. So if your employer says to you, maybe you have education courses that you have to take to keep up your licensing, and your employer's not going to pay for it or reimburse it. That's an unreimbursed employee business expense. Well, if it's, you know, $300 and you're working and you make $100,000, 2% times $100,000 is $2,000. Well, if I spent $300 of unreimbursed, or whatever it said it was, $300 of unreimbursed employee business expenses, that's under that limitation. So I'm not going to have any benefit from those unreimbursed employee business expenses. So unfortunately, sometimes what I think happens is when people have income, some of our deductions are so limited, we never get the benefit of them. And then when we stop working, our income is so low and our expenses are so high because now we've got huge medical expenses because we're in our retirement and we're old and fragile and feeble and having all of our teeth replaced. All of a sudden we have no income and we have high expenses, and now we don't benefit, you know, from the same kind of offset or deductions. So you want to kind of lay some of this out to get an idea of whether it makes sense for you to keep track of them. So quite often when someone's working, they'll come in, they'll tell me, oh, well, I had some unreimbursed employee business expenses. I took a client out to dinner and my employer didn't reimburse me and it was $20. Well, you know what? Don't even bother keeping the receipt or bringing that in because it's in most likelihood not going to be a deduction for you with those kinds of limitations, 2%. The other one that a lot of people will ask me about is they'll say, oh, I had a casualty loss. You know, a tree fell in my yard and it cost me a few hundred dollars to clean it up. And, you know, the insurance didn't cover it because it was under the deductible. Well, there are so many limitations as well on casualty losses. For the most part, I don't see people getting much benefit from this either. You need to understand that if insurance is covering the loss, it's not a casualty loss for you. So if you had a casualty loss that was a $10,000 loss and your insurance company covered it for $10,000, well, you don't really have a casualty loss then. If you have a casualty loss, let's say that is $10,000 and there wasn't insurance coverage, there's first a limit of the first $100 gets wiped out. And then after that, there is a further limitation on it. And it just escaped me off the top of my head, that limitation. But quite often, I am not seeing these as much benefit to people. So before you go through adding up all the receipts from your casualty losses, it may or may not make a difference. You want to check with your tax preparer or accountant. The biggest thing I see that helps kind of help people lean toward itemizing when they're working. We have state and local income taxes. We have, if you're a homeowner, then you have real estate taxes. Sometimes you have mortgage interest. You see how these things start to add up. And then you have charitable contributions. Maybe you're doing the United Way through the work campaign that came through. You don't want to miss taking that. It might be on your pay stub. It might be on your W-2. Some employers will put that amount on the W-2. They're not required to. So quite often, it's a good idea to look at your 1231 pay stub to see what deductions or how certain income or 401k contributions or deferred comp might be reported on that year-end pay stub. But you will also typically see if you're making contributions to the United Way on that pay stub if it's not on your W-2. I'm afraid that some people might miss that. So you want to make sure that you keep track of that if you're doing it through your employer, because you're not going to see it in your checkbook or on your credit card statement. It's through payroll. And so many people these days have online access to their payroll that they're just not looking for it. They don't see it. You set it, forget it, and you literally forget it, and it might make a difference when you're itemizing. So you want to watch out for charitable contributions when you're itemizing, if you know you're itemizing. Keep track of those. You also have to make sure you have the receipts. The IRS wants documentation for that. You don't have to submit the documentation unless it is over a certain dollar amount. And if it's over $500, like to the Goodwill, you have to file a Form 8283, and you're going to need to know the addresses of all of those organizations where you donated, because you have to report that on that Form 8283. And you also have to report how you came up with the value. It's not the fair market value that you purchased that $500 suit. You're not going to get a deduction for $500 for that $500 suit. It's the thrift shop value. And the thrift shop value might be, you know, $30. So you have to be reasonable about this. The IRS could audit, and they want the receipts and documentation for those kinds of contributions. But you do need some type of receipts. And the charitable organizations are usually good about providing those, even the ones that are $25. They're not required to give you that documentation unless it's over $250. But generally, they want to give you that documentation because they like you to keep at the forefront their particular charity, and they want you to keep giving. So you want to kind of gather all these things. I mentioned the big ones, maybe medical expenses, state and local taxes. If you work, if you don't work, there is something that is still available called the sales tax. And this is another time where someone who might not ordinarily itemize because they just have the standard deduction, where this might throw them over is that sales tax deduction. If you have all of a sudden a big purchase of a new car, a new RV, a motorhome, a boat, certain large expenditures will add to the general sales tax, and that might throw you over. So if you are someone who's listening and you have the standard deduction every year, and you bought a new car this year, you might want to look at it to see if it's going to make a difference. I also find that seems to apply more for single taxpayers than married filing joint, because that married filing joint standard deduction has gotten so big that it may not be as applicable in these situations. But for single filers, if maybe you're recently divorced, recently have widowed, you might need to revisit this. All right, folks, if you have questions, still plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. This is Lori Siebert, your host, and we are talking about Schedule A itemized deductions and or the standard deduction tonight. It's tax time, folks. Let's get revved up. Let's get charged up. Let's get our taxes done early. Won't that be exciting? It's such a relief to get them done early, especially when you find out you get a refund. Then it's really exciting. Not so exciting when you owe, but at least if you get them prepared early, you'll know that you owe and you still have 2 months to save up to pay your tax, because the IRS doesn't make you pay until April 15th. I hope you all know that you can still file your return now or wait to file it till April 15th if you owe. But if you can electronically file now and make your payment April 15th. Did you know that? It's good to know. Even if you're doing it out of your bank account, direct debit, which I don't typically recommend, but if you're going to do direct debit out of your bank account, you can tell the IRS not to take it until April 15th. I don't want to tell anybody that the filing date actually is April 18th this year. That's why I keep saying April 15th. So I don't need anyone calling to tell me it's actually April 18th. I'm purposefully not telling people. It's April 15th. So again, if you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810. In talking about itemizing or using the standard deduction, I want to make sure I have time to mention a few things about itemizing. There are so many nuances, so many details that I really just can't cover all of them. The instructions for Schedule A are, which I have typed in front of me, they include some exemption, I don't know what this, a table, but basically the main instructions are about 13 pages. But one I want to point out in particular, when we're talking about medical expenses, you have to know that we can't let you take a deduction for something that's pre-tax already. So if you pay $10,000 for health insurance through your employer and they're taking it out of your paycheck, you're not paying tax on that $10,000. That's a pre-tax deduction from your payroll. You can't then take a deduction for that. You cannot double dip. So that's something to keep in mind. Don't get all excited about all these medical expenses you have. If they're pre-tax, you cannot double dip. But one medical expense that I think some people forget about, well, there's a few. One is long-term care insurance. If you have a long-term care policy that you're paying for, there are certain caps on it. And I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but there's certain caps on that long-term care depending on what age you are. That is a deduction that some people might miss. Also, don't forget about your vision and dental insurance or prescription insurance. Those are all medical expenses that are deductible. Jeff, we have a caller on line one. We have Tim in Albrightsville. Tim, hi, can you hear me?
Good, how are you doing?
Hi, good, how are you?
Good.
Good, how can I help you?
I just had a question. My daughter started college last year.
Okay.
She had a summer and fall session.
Great.
Just wondering how that applies to the status quo and deduction.
Okay. Well, Tim, I normally have a handy reference guide that I can glance at numbers really quick and tell you, so I'm just going to have to ballpark it tonight. But one of the things to keep in mind when we have kids in college, that could be a real great tax credit that you can get. So if she's a freshman and she's like in a four-year program, in 2016, she went summer, fall, you said. She had tuition that she paid. There are a number of different ways you might have paid for that tuition. You might have had money in a college savings plan, which is a 529 account. That lets parents put money into a investment vehicle that can grow and earn money over time. That when we take that money out to pay for college, we don't pay any tax on the earnings and growth if we use it for qualified education expenses. So that's one way to help.
Yes, we did that for the first,
Okay. So the other items that are available, my favorite is the American Opportunity Credit. But parents, and don't tell me how much you make at all, but parents, if they're below a certain income threshold, and off the top of my head, I think it's around $180,000 on page one. So if your page one income's under $180,000 and you've paid out of pocket at least $4,000, you can get this American Opportunity Credit, which is like literally dollar for dollar, like a tax credit, like it's real money of $2,500.
Well, I haven't heard of that.
It's $2,500. You can only do it 4 years. So let's say your daughter takes 6 years to go to school. The IRS is only going to let you do it four times. And again, it's if you're under those thresholds. But here's what I want to make sure I explain, Tim, is I try to help folks navigate this because the IRS doesn't let us do kind of double dipping. We have to coordinate the benefits that we're taking. So let me give you a quick example. Let's pretend the tuition and the total education costs were exactly $4,000 and you had a 529 account and you took exactly $4,000 out of the 529 account. Well, I got the tax benefit for the 529. Therefore, I don't have any extra money available to take the American Opportunity Credit because I've used that benefit for the 529. So what I'll tell people is let's pretend now in my example that the tuition or qualified education expenses are $10,000 and you only took four out of the 529, we still have $6,000 to play with. So that $6,000 will qualify you for the American Opportunity Credit. So whenever I have someone who's eligible because their income is within that range and they have a child going to school, I tell them, make sure that we're pay at least $4,000 out of pocket because if you take $4,000 out of pocket, you're going to get $2,500 free. So in essence, you were only out of pocket $1,500. And now you've let the rest of that money, you know, continue to grow and save for the next year. So that's the American Opportunity Credit. And there, part of it is an actual dollar for dollar offset off your taxes. Some people, it could wipe out their tax. So if you're within a certain income limitation, the IRS will actually let part of that be refundable as well. So basically on a $4,000 kind of tuition bill, in my simple example, you could actually get $2,500. So it's the American Opportunity Credit. The child has to be your dependent. And let's pretend you told me, but Lori, I took it all out in student loans. Doesn't matter. You had that obligation. You have student loans. You still get the credit. Let's say you say, but Lori, my mom paid for my daughter's tuition. She made the check directly to the college. I say, Tim, it's still okay, because as long as someone paid $4,000 out of pocket, not through the 529, and they're your dependent, the credit goes with the dependent. So as long as you're able to claim the child, doesn't matter who paid for it, you get the credit.
So it's $2,500 credit.
Yeah, yeah, but you want
to.
It's for up to 4 years. You can do it. As long as you had, you know, so there's more rules around this. You know, this is general education, so you want to make sure you go look it up and file the proper form. And again, off the top of my head, the education form, I can't remember it off the top of my head. Might be like an 8829 or something. I don't remember what it is, but because I have software that does all that. So anyway, there is a form that you fill out with the IRS that gets attached to your tax return, but it's a great credit. I love it. So I always want to make sure people take advantage of it and plan for it properly. All right.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, great. Have a good night. Thanks for calling. I love the American Opportunity Credit. I think it's just a great incentive for people, and it really can help make the difference for a lot of people who need those extra dollars to help afford the education. And in fact, you know, it may relieve someone from having to take that much more out in a student loan. Lots of great credits there. There's also things like student loan deduction and, again, all kinds of income limitations on all of these. And at some point during tax season, I'll try to have a show on education credits during this tax season, okay, so that we can make sure that we alert people to any of those. Going back to Schedule A for a moment, I mentioned some of the extra medical expenses that some people might forget about, that long-term care. And if you heard me, I think before the break, I mentioned the sales tax. So you might have someone who bought a car. Maybe they bought a $30,000 car in Pennsylvania at 6% sales tax. That's about $1,800. So when they add that $1,800 on to some of their other deductions, plus the general sales tax deduction, that might put someone over in being able to itemize. And again, I see this probably more on people who are filing single, where that kind of a deduction might make more of a difference. I've already talked about charitable contributions, making sure you have your substantiation for those. Mortgage interest, don't forget, there are people who have seller-financed mortgage, or maybe you have a mortgage with your parents. If your parents loan you the money to buy a house, make it official. Have it documented. Have your house be the security for that loan. Your parents will get some interest from the payments you're making to them. They get a little bit, probably more income than they might get at the bank right now. And you get maybe a little bit better rate than you might get at the bank. So it's kind of a win-win for both of you. But you want to make it official so that your parents then report that interest income and you get a deduction as a mortgage interest deduction. So that's like a seller financed or a family loan that's secured by a home, and that could qualify for the mortgage interest deduction. So don't forget about those things. Miscellaneous itemized deduction, one item I want to mention, you can deduct investment management fees. So if you're paying an advisor to manage your investments, that could be a miscellaneous itemized deduction. Sometimes that adds up for people, but you can't forget that there's limitations on that. And if there's any tax exempt income, it has to get allocated and you have to reduce the deduction. And if it's from an IRA, paid directly from an IRA, that also is not a deduction. Lynn from Center City called. She said, deduct $27,000 out of pocket pay for parents, caregiver. Lynn, I only have about a minute left. Real quick, you may have your parent as a dependent, or actually there could be several siblings who together provide more than half the care for their parents, and the siblings can all make an agreement as to who would claim the parent and get a deduction for care that you pay for a parent. And when you're figuring the support, if you're providing more than half the support of your parent, you don't include their Social Security income. So that's a big thing. So Lynn, if I didn't answer your question enough, you're welcome to shoot me an email or call again next week, and I'll make sure that I have some information to answer that in a little bit more detail. Folks, I love the questions. Thanks so much for calling in. We're going to be doing this all tax season, so you can call in or send those emails and check out the website yourfinancialchoices.com for contact information and WDIY.org. Both sites for podcasts that we've had on prior shows. Next week for Valentine's Day, I'm talking about the loved ones and risk management. So I'm diverting from the income tax for next week. Loved ones and risk management, where we're going to talk about making sure you're taking care of your loved ones. Coming up next, I have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Lori. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.